soccer, nonsense, and everything in between. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined, as usual, by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, he was blacked out on Wednesday. He says it had to do with protesting the Stop Online Privacy Act, but I'm not convinced. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant?
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going very well. The blackout went fine.
Terrific. Also with us, the man originally cast to play Thor in the upcoming film The Avengers. Instead, he's a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and senior editor at Sportsnet magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
I guess I'd probably be better if I was actually cast as Thor.
Yeah, you should have stuck with The Avengers.
I kind of quit halfway through.
What went wrong?
I forgot my hammer at home.
That's a problem. It's a problem we all have from time to time. On today's show, we will be joined by Cara Lang, who will preview the CONCACAF Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament, which kicks off in Vancouver tonight. We will also be answering some questions from the audience that you guys have been providing us with over the course of the past week. Later on in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as a regrettable stomp, the Indian Premier League, and beer. Everyone likes those things. But before any of that, gentlemen, as I said, we're going to be joined in just a matter of minutes by Cara, who's going to be speaking with us about the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament that gets going tonight, Thursday the 19th, in Vancouver, Canada's first match against Haiti. This is really the biggest tournament that we've had in this country since, I'd say, the 2007 Men's Under-20 World Cup. So, Jamie, I'll ask you first. You excited about this tournament? What are your thoughts?
I am excited about this tournament. Those are my thoughts. My thoughts of excitement and, all right, of the tournament.
Okay, I'll turn to someone who doesn't collect a paycheck from Sportsnet and ask Grant, what are your thoughts on the tournament?
Wait, I just want to say that I look forward to watching all the matches live on Sportsnet,
Sportsnet
1, or Sportsnet.ca.
Shut up. Grant?
I'll say that for a paycheck.
Oh, God.
All right. No, I mean, I'm more sort of excited about the end of the tournament. I mean, not the actual finishing of the tournament, but I mean
Boy, I can't wait for this to be over with.
This is awful. I have to sit through this. No, I mean the sort of the final game. Maybe the final two games, the semifinal and the final.
You're presuming that Canada makes it, and I think we
I'm not really excited about watching Canada play Haiti and Cuba, but
I don't know. I mean, if we end up with a crossover between Haiti and the Dominican Republic, that could be some exciting action for folks down on that island, don't
island
you think?
Island Derby, yeah.
Espanola.
But we'll almost certainly get a different kind of derby match between Canada and the U.S. in the final. Jamie, is that what you're projecting, and how geeked up are you about that, man?
I'm a little bit nervously geeked about it because Canada tends to not come out too well, not to fare too well in matchups with the States. And I don't know if matches against, you know, Haiti and Costa Rica are really good preparation to play the number one ranked team in the world.
Yeah, but you got to start somewhere, right?
Well, there's added geopolitical tension now with the Keystone Pipeline being rejected.
This should really be
This is, you know,
they should let this match decide the fate of the Keystone
Pipeline.
Pipeline.
I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
So what you're saying is that kind of like in the 2002 Olympics when that ice maker went and buried a bit of a loony beneath the ice, it helped the men's and women's team win gold medals in hockey. You're saying that someone at BC Place should take a blob of tar sands bitumen from Alberta, bury that under the field somehow, which would be tough because it's field turf, and that will inspire the Canadian team to a victory over the U.S.?
What I'm saying is that they should just flood the field at random points during the game with some crude.
I thought the Americans were going to bury an eagle under the pitch.
That would be
like a live bird.
How are they going to?
That would get everyone in a lot of trouble.
Emerge,
they're going to bury
a
live bird, Grant.
An eagle, the symbol of America.
Yeah, it's not going to last very long.
I don't think that really works.
It'll help them win.
I don't know how much you know about burying live animals alive.
But a bit, actually.
You must have had a great growing up in Selkirk.
And as if the States win and the Keystone Pipeline goes through, the only thing that can make Greenpeace even more mad at them is if they bury a live endangered species under the turf.
Now I'm just picturing Peter Montopoli, whoever, coming out at the end of the tournament. Not only do we have the victory in this tournament, take this, or just a hose that sprays the American team with sweet oil crude.
Sweet crude.
Yeah, clearly my oil terminology is not what it could be.
Sweet oil crude.
Yeah, Grant, barring any of this nonsense, does Canada qualify for the Olympics coming out of this tournament?
Yes.
Jamie?
Oh, yeah.
I'm also going to say yes, and someone else who I imagine has similarly optimistic thoughts about the Canadian team is a veteran of that Canadian women's national team, Cara Lang. She is now a broadcaster who will be covering the tournament over in Vancouver, and she'll be joining us to speak about the tournament right after this. Joining us on the line now from Vancouver, BC, is Cara Lang. Cara, welcome to the Some Canadian Guys podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, it's needless to say, last year was a bit of a tumultuous year for the Canadian women's national team, but they have been getting a bit of momentum going under new head coach John Herdman. What are your thoughts so far on his performance as Canadian coach?
Well, I mean, I think the first major test for him was obviously the Pan Am Games, and they won the gold medal there. You know, not the highest level of competition that they're going to see, certainly in the next year, especially if they qualify for the Olympics. But, you know, for his first major tournament coaching that team, they had a great performance. And it wasn't even, you know, their full lineup. They had a lot of players committed to professional teams, and so he even had to bring in some younger players as well to that. So, you know, if that's any sign of the direction that this team is headed in, I think that things are looking positive.
Cara, so John Herdman has suggested that the first three games of this tournament could be frustrating because the teams will basically just try to defend and do nothing else. Mm-hmm. So what are you expecting to see in the first round?
So I fully expect teams to bunker against the Canadian team, just get as many players behind the ball as they possibly can, weather the storm, and then, you know, hope for a Hail Mary goal at some point towards the dying minutes of the game. And I think that that's something that the Canadian team is preparing for. Obviously, Herdman has already mentioned it, and also I think just in past years it's always something that you expect from teams like that in tournaments like this. And something that, while it's very frustrating, if you're expecting it and if you are training and preparing for it in your practices leading up to it, you do find ways to get around it.
You mentioned what Canada's expecting and what they're preparing for, but even John Herdman has mentioned that it's really hard to do scouting on teams like Cuba and Haiti, because mm-hmm. and not a lot is known about their players. For Canadian players, how tough is it to go into games when you know little or nothing about the opposition?
You know, as a player, I think you're just so much more focused on your own individual performance and your team's performance. It is obviously always very helpful to have a scouting report on the team that you're playing against, but at this level, you need to be able to evaluate your opposition in the first few minutes of the game and then go from there. I think that there's a general idea of what these teams are going to produce and what to expect from these teams. It's well known that, you know, while we don't know very much about Haiti, we know that they're going to be very athletic. So, you know, you need to expect to run a lot in that game. And then, you know, a country like Costa Rica or Guatemala, they're going to be very skillful just by nature of that country and the tradition of soccer in that country. But then as far as individual players that they have, yeah, there's not very much in terms of scouting on those players, but that's just something that you need to adapt to quickly, and that's part of being a professional soccer player.
Now, there is one team that Canada could find itself up against in the tournament later on in the semifinal, and that would be Mexico, and that's what a lot of people are guessing is going to happen at this point. They're projecting Canada to win the group, Mexico to come second, and then have it come down to that vital semifinal game on the 27th. So if we can just, you know, for the sake of argument, look ahead and just be hopeful here about what will happen, what do you know of the Mexican side, and what could Canada expect from that team in that potential semifinal match?
Well, Mexico actually, in my opinion, surprised a lot of people in last summer's World Cup. In fact, they had a better result than Canada did in that tournament. And they have a tendency to shock you a little bit. I know that in the qualification tournament for Greece, when I was still on the team, we lost to Mexico in a major upset. So, and then another example is when Mexico beat the U.S. in the World Cup qualifying tournament. You know, that was a huge shock to the U.S. And to everybody watching, I think even to the Mexican team. So, you know, you can't underestimate them. They are very skillful, and they have come a long way in recent years. They've got a lot of American college team players with Mexican background now playing for their team. So the level has been raised. They've also got a domestic league, which has made a big difference for them as well. So this isn't a team that's just going to roll over for Canada by any means. I think, you know, they have some dangerous players for sure. They're willing to try anything. They take a lot of shots from range. So I think defensively the Canadian team is going to need to be on their toes. But at the same time, I think that Canada's attack is superior to anything I think that the Mexican team defensively can put up to stop them. So I think that things will work out in the Canadian team's favor, but they're going to have to work for it.
So, Cara, in terms of newcomers to the Canada setup this time around, who should fans be keeping an eye on for this tournament?
Well, I think one player in particular, she's not necessarily a newcomer, but she's certainly getting a lot more minutes than she ever has in the past, and that's Christina Julian. I expect actually to see her starting quite a bit, and she was always really a bubble player in the last few years, and she's made some huge strides, both under Carolina Maracci and now under John Herdman, who seems to have a very strong belief in her and what she's capable of. So I think that she's one player to look out for. I think that we can expect to see her playing up front with Melissa Tancredi for the most part. And then I think Desiree Scott, for sure. She's, again, another player. She's been in the player pool and in the program. She was at the World Cup, but she very rarely saw any playing time. And now I think that she's going to be a key player in the midfield for the Canadian team, especially with Diana Matheson now out. Desiree Scott's going to be playing that holding midfield position, and I think she's really going to orchestrate a lot coming out of the back in creating the attack for the Canadian team. And so that's a role for her. It's a lot more responsibility than she's ever had. And really in this specific formation that they're playing, it's a role that is vital.
You mentioned there, of course, one of the pieces of bad news that the team got prior to the tournament, which was the confirmation that Diana Matheson would not be able to take part. She's not yet recovered from knee surgery. You were a teammate of hers for years with the Canadian team. So maybe tell us a little bit about what she brings to the team. And you spoke to this a little bit a moment ago, what the Canadian team will need to do to make up for her absence at this tournament. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's really no player like Diana Matheson. I think in terms of trying to replace her, that's not even an option. I don't think that that's something that anybody can even attempt to do, because she just brings something that nobody else can. I mean, she is an unbelievable workhorse, and then at the same time, she's one of the most intelligent players that I've ever played with and now that I've ever watched. You know, her ball-winning ability is unbelievable, and for somebody of her size, her ability to win the ball in the air even is impressive. But I think mostly it's just you know, how much running she does. She covers so much ground. So I think that's something that means that the rest of the midfield is going to need to work a little bit harder, but I don't think that that's too much to expect of them. I think that this team is peaking fitness-wise right now, and also as far as making up for her absence, one thing that John Herdman has done is he's really built up this midfield. I think he's got a problem on his hands right now that many coaches would love to have, and that's almost too many options in the midfield. I think that, you know, we're going to see a number of different lineups for this team, especially in these first few games, because he has so many choices between Brittany Timko, Kaylin Kyle, Sophie Schmidt, Kelly Parker, Desiree Scott. You know, I think there's going to be a rotation, and each one of those players brings something different, and they're all playing very well at this time. So, you know, while Diana Matheson is going to be missed, because she will always be missed, she is that good of a player, I think that that they'll be able to handle it.
So, Cara, based on your own previous experiences, can you sort of talk about what it means for these players to play for Canada on Canadian soil?
Well, the opportunity to play at home is something that this team has fought for very vocally, actually, and even in the media with the association, because ultimately, you know, to get home games here in Canada, it really is the responsibility of the association to organize those. And for whatever reason, you know, that hasn't been happening in the last few years. And I think that it, in many ways, has been detrimental to the development of the game in this country and for these players, because it really is an experience that you can't match. I think now, though, that they do have the chance, I think that this is really just the beginning, because the next few years we're going to see a lot of Canadian women's soccer here in Canada. And I think that it's just going to continue to grow the game. And for the players themselves, you know, obviously there's a home field advantage. And knowing these women personally, you know, and knowing, I mean, I was a part of that battle as well for many years to try to get more games at home. And so I know exactly what it means to them, and I know that it means a lot. They're certainly going to take advantage of it, and they're certainly going to cherish it. I think that, you know, just having the support of your own fans really does make a huge difference. And in anticipation of that, I think that it affects your preparation as well. So these past few months for them, you know, I'm sure that that's been on their minds, wanting to perform well at home. So I think that it's going to affect the product that we see on the field for sure.
You mentioned that the players are very keen to perform very well at home. Do you think that there's somewhere in the back of their minds maybe that they have a chance now to make up for not fulfilling the pretty high expectations that were had for them in the World Cup, now that they have kind of a captive audience, it's at home and it's a pretty big stage, that they can make an impact?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, a good performance in this tournament would basically right the wrongs of the World Cup. I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, fans can be pretty fickle, and it would be pretty easy to forget what happened in the summer if they can, especially if they can win this tournament, but even if they just qualify out of this tournament. I think that, you know, their performance at the Pan Am Games, yes, it was a little bit of redemption, but not many people even knew about it. It wasn't very highly publicized, and it's just not something that people were really aware of. So this would be the time to sort of, I think, win back those fans.
Now, this tournament being a high-profile tournament on Canadian soil, a lot of people have drawn the parallels to the tournament that took place 10 years ago out on the West Coast as well, the 2002 Under-19 FIFA Women's World Championships. You were a part of that tournament, as well as a number of other players who have gone on to have long and successful careers for the Canadian Women's National Team, Christine Sinclair, Erin McLeod, Carmelina Moscato, a number of other players. And, of course, that tournament came down to the big Canada-U.S. showdown. And that's, you know, we were speaking a bit earlier about what may happen in this tournament, and it looks, again, barring some kind of strange upset, that's what it may come down to again. That was a big, huge event at Commonwealth Stadium back in 2002, and it helped launch a number of careers. Are you seeing, and you spoke to this a moment ago, are you seeing this as a chance for another opportunity such as that to launch a number of careers for some of these young players and to vault the Canadian women's team and the women's game into the Canadian consciousness once again?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I see this tournament playing out, or at least it has the potential to play out that way. I think, you know, it could go one of two ways. It, you know, unfortunately, ticket sales at this point haven't been great. I think that they've been lower than many people expected, but I think that it's one of those things that it's going to build on momentum. And I also think that soccer fans, you know, are more aware than maybe we give them credit for, and perhaps they're not buying tickets for these group stage games because, like many of us, they expect them to be, I guess, lower quality than the crossover game and then the potential final game. But that's not to say that they won't be, it's not going to be great soccer. I think that there's still certainly value to coming out to those games and watching those games. But I think that this is a tournament that is, as the Canadian team is more and more successful, that people are really going to start paying attention. And I, like we saw in Edmonton, it wasn't just something that soccer fans were paying attention to. And I still hear it to this day, you know, people who say, I never watched soccer before that under-19 tournament. And it was a group of teenagers that, you know, got them to turn on the TV and turn on a soccer game. And I think that that says a lot about the impact that a tournament like that can have, especially in a country like this where Canadian sports fans in general are so willing to get behind their Canadian athletes. And so I think that, yeah, this tournament, as it goes on, the momentum's going to build, and a Canada-U.S. final would very much parallel what happened in Edmonton, and except it would, in terms of quality, it would be even better. You know, these are not just a bunch of young girls would be playing in this tournament. These would be some of the best players in the world with the U.S. team. I mean, people would be watching Hope Solo, Abby Wambach, Megan Rapinoe, you know, some of the really, really some of the best players in the world. So it's going to be great soccer, and I think that soccer fans have a lot to look forward to.
Cara, I think you may have touched on this in a piece you wrote for Sportsnet earlier this week, but what would be the impact on this program if they don't qualify for the Olympics?
Well, I think that it would certainly make things harder than they are already right now. I think this program and this team is in need of a boost, and right now, you know, they've got all the right ingredients. They've got a great player pool. They've got, in my opinion, a great coach with the potential to take this team and this program very far. But certainly having a team or not having a team in the Olympics would be extremely anticlimactic and sort of, I think, set them back a little bit. It's not to say that they wouldn't be able to recover from it, but I think that at the very least would be a huge missed opportunity. The Olympics kind of would just be sort of the thing that would set everything off and just really get the ball rolling in preparation for 2014 and 2015 when the World Cup comes to Canada. And I think that, for the most part, would just be a huge missed opportunity.
As we said off the top, you're in Vancouver covering the tournament for Sportsnet. So when and where can people see you and hear more of your thoughts as the tournament goes along?
Well, we'll be covering all 15 games of the tournament starting from the 19th. The only days that there aren't games are the 25th, the 26th, and the 28th. So every night on Sportsnet or Sportsnet 1, we will be airing doubleheader games. It will be Canada will play one day and then the U.S. plays the next day, so they'll alternate in that way. They both Canada and the U.S. games are the later games. So starting on the 19th with Canada's game against Haiti, and then from there, everybody can follow the rest of the tournament. And as I said, we will be covering every game.
That has been player turned broadcaster Cara Lang joining us on the line from Vancouver. Cara, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thanks once again to Cara for joining us to talk about the tournament in a serious way. As you heard before that, we spoke about it in a bit of a less than serious way. And I realize now, with the time to think about it, the phraseology I was going for was sweet light crude, which is a type of oil as far as I know. I mean, I read the business pages fairly religiously.
Sweet light crude is usually how I like to define myself in online profiles and such.
So you're like sweet light crude 42 on Lava Life or something?
No.
And you're easy to sort of, or difficult to pull out of the sand, I guess.
Yes, if I'm buried in the sand like an eagle, I would be hard to get out of it.
Well, that's wonderful stuff. We are now going to get to questions from the audience. On last week's show, we solicited some questions for you guys that you wanted us to answer, and you poured the answers in like some sweet light crude via all sorts of different channels.
I want to say this is. Yes. I feel this is very important that we do this, that we connect with our fan base, that we're interactive and proactive and reactive.
Reactive
also. Just active in a whole lot of different kind of ways.
Is this going back to your New Year's resolution about being healthier and more active, Jamie? You're kind of sounding like Hal Johnson in the way that you're encouraging people to be active.
If I'm reminding anybody of Hal Johnson, I'm going to count that as a victory.
Jamie,
you have a hell of a Hal Johnson story.
We don't have the time for it now, but at some point you need to tell people your Hal Johnson story. But maybe that'll be a question someone will ask in a future episode. Jamie, Hal Johnson story? But for now, we're going to get to these questions that people sent in to us. We're going to try to get to as many of them as possible. If you want to interact with us to, you know, further follow these up or ask questions of your own, we'll give you the details at the end of the show. We'll get to as many of these as we can. We have no guarantee about the quality or accuracy of any of these answers. Gentlemen, you good to go?
No.
Well, too bad. We're going to start anyway. Jamie.
All right.
I'm going to start with a question that I'm going to say addressed to you specifically. It comes from Steven via Twitter. Steven is one of our many fans of the show over in Newfoundland and Labrador. And by many, I mean I know of at least two.
Mm-hmm.
But his question is, how much should Arsenal fans stress about top four finish? Shaky performance of late. What's the real issue with Arsenal?
Being an Arsenal fan, I'm going to come at this with a very biased perspective.
Well, that's why I asked you, really, because I couldn't care less about Arsenal.
Well, fair enough. I think Arsenal fans should stress one whole heck of a lot about a top four finish. Not having won any trophies for a long time, it's kind of all we have to cling to. And B, the money that we need, the money that you get from being in the Champions League, the tens of millions of pounds that come from that are vital to Arsenal, who have made a few business decisions that haven't really played out very well. I don't think they saw coming all the money that's flooded into football in the past couple of years. So their sponsorship deals don't really pay off the amount that they should for a team of Arsenal's stature. So they need this money. As for what the real issue is with Arsenal, I assume the real issue that's holding them back and making them kind of crappy this year, I would say it is strength in depth. You can only get so far with having one man score all the goals for you, that one man being Robin van Persie.
And interestingly, if they don't make the Champions League, he'll probably go to Barcelona.
So yeah, he'll go somewhere. He'll find greener pastures,
Problems piled on top of problems.
Exactly. And I mean, well, problems piled on top of problems are exactly what Arsenal's facing. Pretty much everyone who tries to play fullback for Arsenal this season is going to get injured. They've all their four, the two starters and the two backups are all injured kind of long-term, and they're going to start coming back in the relatively soon. But then the guys that they put in there to replace them as just kind of stopgaps also got injured. So it's coming to the point where I know you guys want me to play fullback for Canada. I might get called up by Arsenal.
Well, I think we actually wanted you at right back, but, you know, you're a versatile guy. All I'll say here, Jamie, is that Arsenal has shown as of late that they don't have an issue and that Arsene Wenger developed relationships with players who played for Arsenal in the past, who scored goals for Arsenal in the past, and is willing to bring them back in to help the team when needed. And so I'm going to say to you that looking forward, there is a player with some past Arsenal pedigree who I know is a favorite of yours that they could potentially call on to come back to the club if need be.
Oh, no.
I speak, of course, of Nicholas Bentner.
Oh, God.
And all will be well. Grant?
Yes.
I'm going to flip this next one over to you. It's also an EPL-themed question. It comes from Navi via email. He says, with Simeon Jackson getting more playing time with Norwich City, do you think he's doing enough to stay on at Norwich? And with the World Cup qualifying round coming up for Canada this summer, is he our starter up front? Kind of a double-barreled question.
No, I'm going to load up both barrels and fire out a yes out of each one.
Grant's got a double yes barrel out of his sweet light crude.
Kapow.
That was easy.
Jamie, what do you think?
Wait a minute. Do I get to elaborate?
Well, if you're going
to
answer in a yes or no style,
we got to move on quickly here, setting myself up.
I'm giving you time to reload those barrels.
Yeah, sorry. 1 minute. I think especially over the course of, the past 5, 6, 7 games, definitely Simeon Jackson has done enough to keep his, if not a starting spot, at least get regular playing time in Norwich. And, at this point in my mind, there's not even really a lot of question that he would be starting forward for Canada.
Jamie, any thoughts there?
Unless all things go incredibly well in the next couple of weeks and then the next couple of months and David Højlund kind of plops into Canada's lap, I don't see anybody overtaking Simeon Jackson up front.
Even then, I don't see him. I think he definitely deserves to be there. It would be a travesty if he was not.
An utter travesty. You know,
but I mean, with the bigger travesty being Simeon Jackson putting in all this work, earning the top spot, and then having a player who is arguably better than him overtake it, or would the bigger travesty be putting Simeon Jackson up front and then we don't qualify for the World Cup?
Gentlemen, this is a discussion that could take hours on end, but I'm going to move into the next question here, and we can kind of keep up the same general thematic, as it were. This comes to us from Junior via Twitter. Jamie, I'm going to send it to you first. He says, when can we expect the CSA to insist Canadian soccer players and citizens must, he capitalizes the word must, commit to the national team with no, capitalize no, more exit points? That's probably a bit of a reference to some of the players we've seen represent other nations in the past and some that have been on the fence. So what do you think? Is this a realistic expectation?
No, I think we can expect it as soon as the CSA decides to entirely dispense with international law. You can't really force.
It could be on the horizon. People. We don't know.
As soon as Dominic Mastracci becomes the, you know, dictator president of Canada, then, you know, if and when that happens, then maybe. But
well,
otherwise,
I know. I mean, there's been, like, doesn't Australia do something? I mean, I think maybe you could structure this kind of commitment in a way that you know, if the player is going to come to the camps or be involved in special training programs, mm-hmm. they have to make some kind of commitment. I mean, I don't think it would work, and I'm not in favor of it, but I don't think it's entirely illegal.
Well, there's, I know, I,
although
but,
I have no idea.
You can legally bind someone to something like that. You can make younger players in the youth setup sign a letter of intent, maybe, or there might be some way of getting them to pay back what was paid into their training if they decide to not play for Canada. I don't really know. That could work. Basically, we just need to shame these people if they look to leave. Well, just a horrible, horrible shaming.
The pen is mightier than the sword. And to be clear, I was never advocating use of the sword.
No. That'd be a weird one.
Grant, I have a pen in my hand right now, and I recently rewatched a favorite film of mine, Serenity. And the killer in that film carries a sword around. I guarantee you this thing is not mightier than the thing he was carrying.
But if you write him a nastily worded letter, he might put that sword down in shame.
He's an actor who portrayed a role about 7 years ago, so I'm guessing he wouldn't personally care very much. Let's move on a little bit here to a bit of, you know, again, a bit of a similar theme here. Kind of a strange question, but, you know, he said we should take a shot at it anyway. This is also from Steven via Twitter, but a different Steven with a V instead of a PH, I believe. He says, how many players per birth year do the academies need to develop into the national pool in order for Canada to thrive as a CONCACAF power? Let's throw out some numbers. Grant?
Well, no, this question actually got me thinking.
Uh-oh. Well, that's kind of the idea. Generally, questions are meant to provoke thought.
All right, well, so it worked. It got me thinking about Barcelona's academy, for example. And no, I've often wondered.
A realistic comparison.
No. I'm just saying, could Barcelona's academy exist in a vacuum? Not literally, but what I'm saying
just
is
a gigantic vacuum.
Yeah,
cleaner.
And there's Hoover.
All these excellent soccer playing kids inside it. No, I mean, the thing is, we talk about developing this broad framework for developing players, whereas Barcelona just has one school, one academy, and they, you know, they've produced basically half the top 10 players in the world right now. So I'm saying, rather than concentrate on all these other things, let's just have one academy.
One really good, or there could be, like in France, they have Clairefontaine, which is like the national academy, and players go to, you know, whatever club from there.
Right.
And if there was a Canadian version of that, not affiliated with Toronto FC or the Whitecaps or the Impact, just the Canada's best soccer minds in this one centralized place trying to develop talent.
Jamie, you've got Canada's best soccer minds in one centralized place. It's right here, baby.
Exactly.
This studio.
Next phase, our own academy.
Oh, yikes.
I believe the U.S. has been doing something similar to that as of late with a national team youth academy, or this might just be for the youth team, so forgive me if I'm wrong in any of this, in Bradenton, California, which is kind of along the lines of what you guys were just suggesting, whether or not something like that is feasible for, you know, Canada, just with travel and distance and other concerns.
Yeah,
I mean,
this may shock you, but I was kind of joking. I mean, I think you still do.
You don't actually want to put the players into a large cleaning device.
Well, then, Grant, just give us a number then. Just pick a number.
The question is in each birth year or something.
Yeah, sure. Players per birth year. Yeah.
1,000.
Okay, Jamie?
1,000?
Yeah, that's in no way.
Into the national pool. I mean, that's...
Wait a minute. Into what?
Develop these players into the national pool. Legitimate call-ups.
Again, Grant.
All right, 50.
All right, Jamie?
Even that seems huge. I'm going to go with a baker's dozen.
I'm going to go with 1,000. I like Grant's ambition. Another question that came into us via email.
Well, that's 27 national soccer teams.
So you're saying we need to have 1,000 possible call-ups for the national team, Jamie, just to be one of the power in CONCACAF?
Jamie, we got to move on here. We got to move on. We don't have time to address all of these.
We don't have time to revisit and rationalize our answers.
19 national coaches just to go through the list every time
we
have a friendly.
We must move forward, not backward, upward, not forward, and ever twirling towards the World Cup.
Oh,
this next question comes to us from Alberto via email, and this is kind of a broad question here, but hopefully we can just answer it very glibly. Is Canada actually in the business of soccer, or is it really just still about fun and recreation? And this is kind of a problem that that has been spoken about in the past. And maybe I'll incorporate this with another question that comes from someone calling themselves Hodgkiss over at the Voyageurs message board, which is what can be done to improve the marketing of the national program? So the basic question here is, is soccer in Canada kind of a really professional setup, or is it still just kind of fun and games? And if not, what can we do to make it take a step forward, Grant?
Ted Hodgkiss was my my first soccer coach as a kid.
Do you think, excitable
guy from Liverpool. I don't think it's the same person.
Do you think this is who's on the Voyageurs message board?
No, I don't think so.
If it is, please send Grant an email and let him know. I'm sure he'll have plenty of wonderful memories.
And if you got pictures of Grant as a young soccer player, we would very much appreciate those.
If you have any evidence of Grant's mid-80s kid mullet, we would very much like to see that.
Man.
Grant, would you like to weigh in on the question?
No, I'm going to let Jamie do it because I forgot what the question was.
All right. Grant, give me a number.
491.
Okay, Jamie?
I think that with the new setup of the CSA, there's a very good chance that Canada could be more businesslike and more professional in their approach to soccer. The idea that Canada, is it still fun and recreation? I mean, we're all Canada fans. I can't remember the last time I had fun watching Canada play. But, as for the marketing, they've already done quite a lot to improve the marketing, which is not saying a lot considering they did absolutely no marketing before. And now they've just kind of seemed to have handed it over to Umbro, who do marketing. Obviously, they do it for their own interests as well, but it's getting the word out, and they obviously have a more professional marketing setup, and they have a brand that's recognizable, and they can reach more people than the CSA, who don't seem to know how to market things.
And that's why people want to tune in later for Taste the Trivia, where they can win an Umbro zip-up jacket. Continue, Jamie.
I guess it's just going from there, just kind of creating some kind of, I hate using terms like this, but just creating a brand around Canadian soccer. But then you see things like the 100th anniversary logo that they've come up with, which is just it's the weakest attempt. I'm sorry, CSA, but they've got the
argument. I haven't seen it. Is it just the number 100?
Yeah, it's literally like the current logo with just kind of tacked onto the side as an afterthought, 100 in blue, and then like the dates 1912 to 2012. Like, Arsenal.
Wait a minute. Yeah, that's 100. Carry on.
Yeah, that is 100. Arsenal is currently in their 100th year. Or, no, 125th, I should say. And they've come up with a whole new kind of glorious oak leaf inspired emblem. And that's the kind of thing that I was really hoping that Canada would do. I mean, nobody particularly is in love with the current logo. There's no reason why you can't just make a wholesale departure from that and come up with something really cool.
I still remember the logo and the buttons and even the jingle associated with the 125th anniversary of Canada in 1992. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember in school, they'd give us all these little stupid buttons and rulers and stuff, and it was all, Canada, 1, 2, 5.
Yeah.
See, there you go. So what we're saying, CSA, is we need some kind of equivalent to that, Grant? You think? Do you want to come up with
the
jingle?
I don't think we had that in Manitoba, but I'll come up with the jingle, definitely.
Well, maybe I don't know. I mean, Jamie and I went to school in Ontario. Maybe in Manitoba they're not, you know, maybe they're more interested in the 125th anniversary of Manitoba joining Confederation rather than the initial Confederation, maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm just suspicious about all of this.
I blame Louis Riel one way or the other.
Do I?
Yeah, my point is basically just that this seems like a huge opportunity. Canadian soccer is becoming more and more kind of relevant and more visible, and they could have made such a huge stamp with the 100th anniversary, and it seems to be an opportunity so far, and we're only just into the year. The logo seemed like a pretty big way to kick off making an impact, and so far it seems to be an opportunity missed.
Well, that's okay. We've still got 11 months to go to correct things. What we don't have 11 months to do is finish this question period, so we're going to move on to the next one. My segues are as great as ever. Grant, I'm going to throw this to you. This is another one that comes into us via email. With the CSL, the Canadian Soccer League, semi-pro setup in Ontario with a team in Quebec, for those who aren't familiar with it, in danger of losing its status as a Division III league in Canada, do you think it's time for the CSL to step aside and let another group come in and try to set up? And do you have any thoughts on the proposed Ontario League One? I don't know if you guys have heard about what's at play here, but
vaguely, is there another group ready to step in? It would be my answer to that question, which is in fact a question.
Ontario League One is a new. I don't even know if I could call it. Well, I mean, some players would be getting paid a little bit of money, so I guess it's semi-pro league that is currently before the OSA board. I think they have until the end of this month to come up with 8 franchises, and then the deadline for their final approval to start play this year is near the end of next month. And this would be, you know, pretty low-level stuff. I mean, I think their salary cap, from what I read, would be $40,000. Not per player, but in total. So where that would stand in the soccer pyramid, I don't know. But do you have any kind of thoughts on that level of play, Grant, and where it sits right now?
I mean, it seems to me that with the CSL existing the way it does now, it might be easier just to try to fix the problems that exist with it, as opposed to tearing it down and starting all over again.
Yeah, and there's also...
I don't know. It's not like there's a lot to tear down, is there, really?
I think the problem is... this idea is incumbent on getting rid of the CSL and having the CSL kind of voluntarily go away. And without saying anything that's going to get me in any kind of legal hot water, the CSL seems to... There are allegations of some shady business going on around there, and that these gentlemen may not be so inclined to just walk away from this.
Yeah, I was going to say that there appear to be some issues within the Canadian Soccer League that are endemic, and to move forward, it may be necessary to kind of tear things down and try to start from a new scenario. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, the idea is always to hopefully give young Canadian players a place to play and give them a spot in the Canadian soccer pyramid somewhere. And whether that league is in Ontario is CSL or Ontario League One or whatever else it is, I mean, I don't know. As a fan, I just hope that there's something for these kids to look forward to. Going to move on to the next sort of quick fire questions here, because we're running out of time, which doesn't make sense because we have no time limit. But I'm saying we're running out of time, so these are going to be quick answers here. Jamie, I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah.
This question comes to us from Charles via Facebook. Who will make the playoffs first, Toronto FC or the Impact? I know this fellow. He is an Impact fan. Well, he's not an Impact fan, but he's from Montreal. So keep that in mind when you answer. We're trying to please the listeners here.
Mm-hmm. Toronto FC.
Grant?
Please the listeners, eh? Montreal.
Yeah, but you're just wrong.
How do you know? They haven't even played
the season
yet.
I think Grant and I can make a bet here.
Yeah.
I say Toronto FC will make the playoffs this year.
All right.
No, well, that's not... I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be this year. It's just which franchise...
Well, I think they're going to make the playoffs eventually.
I think Toronto FC is going to make the playoffs before Montreal does.
Grant, are you willing to take that bet?
Yeah.
All right. What's on the line?
Well, I don't know. We can have the listeners... not phone in, obviously, but Facebook in and let us know what they think is worthy of betting.
You can just punch random digits on your phone until you reach someone that sounds vaguely like one of us.
I remember on the old incarnation of the podcast, we came dangerously close to having a bet between Grant and I, whereupon the loser would have to go to clown college.
The problem was I kind of wanted to go to clown college, which seemed, so that didn't...
That was
not
in the spirit of the bet. I might just go and Google George Brown College again and see if that's still a viable option.
Jamie, you should clarify here for people associated with George Brown College. They have a clowning course. You're not calling the whole school. Man, I'd go to George Brown.
You clown college. No, it's the course was literally called Introduction to Clown, which sounds like it just takes 5 minutes. You meet a clown, he squirts you with a flower, you get out of there. But no, it's actually...
Man,
it's very much... I imagine it's very much like that Simpsons episode where Homer goes to clown college and the pants fit him perfectly. I mean, yeah, you see where it goes from there.
Well, Grant, you have had a lot of trouble throughout your life finding a pair of pants that fit properly.
That's true.
Maybe this is the opportunity you need.
Clown college.
Anyway, to anyone from Toronto FC or Montreal that's listening to this, you now have clear motivation to go out there and make the playoffs this year.
You can force a man to go to clown college.
Well, a man who kind of wants to go anyway. Next question, where are we going to go? This comes to us from Fred via Twitter. Jamie, I'll go to you first.
Okay.
Where do you want to see Ali Gerba end up in 2012?
Oh.
Clown college.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
That would be wonderful.
Where do I want to see Ali Gerba? All right, there's kind of two ways of taking this question, because I really want to see him in the line at the Mandarin Buffet, because that would just confirm all kinds of funny stereotypes I've made up about him. As far as soccer goes...
I don't think you've made up those stereotypes. You've propagated them, perhaps.
I've definitely propagated them. I'd like to see him playing professionally somewhere, but, I mean, it seems like he's run out of teams to play for.
I want to see him cross, like, a new frontier.
Like, so, going to space? What are you talking about?
Yes, I want him to start in the Space League.
That would be, or he becomes like some kind of Wild West pioneer, and he's just Ali Gerba in a wagon heading west.
He'll be the sword-wielding assassin in Serenity 2, hitting the big screen sometime soon.
I mean, like, I don't know. In a place none of us would expect that he would turn up. Well, soccer related.
This studio.
None of us would have expected him to turn up in, you know, the English championship or the second division or an MLS or just kind of scoring in the Gold Cup. I mean, that's his milieu is showing up in places we don't expect him to.
I want to see him show up on stage at a Kanye West concert. That would be the ultimate.
Good. I also apologize for the way I pronounced milieu there. It's just been repeating in my head, and I sound like an idiot.
I don't think anybody's going to complain about that one.
Nobody should.
We're going to move quickly here. Grant?
Yep.
Do you have any thoughts on this? From David via Facebook, who is the best Canadian-born player of all time?
Canadian-born player of
yes.
all time.
Ooh.
Ali Gerba is out of the running, unfortunately.
Can't say Ali Gerba. I mean, Owen Hargreaves? I mean, if we're just talking about skill level, I mean, who's sort of achieved the most and gone to the highest level?
Jamie? Yeah, it's hard to admit, but
if we're taking that question
be.
Literally, if I'm leaving my emotions, checking my emotions in the emotion check room,
it's just downstairs here at the Rogers campus. Yeah, Jamie,
don't lose your ticket to the emotion check room. I'd have to say Owen Hargreaves as well, as hard as it is to confess to. But I mean, I don't see someone who can top him.
Well, we'll have yet to see how David Junior Hoilette makes out in his English Premier League career. At the age of 21, he's already a rising star, legitimate transfer rumor target for a lot of the big teams in what is, you know, ostensibly the greatest league in the world at one of its most powerful periods in the history of humanity.
Not including Barcelona and Real Madrid.
No, but, yeah. You know, beyond that. Then we'll go to another question from Facebook from Zach. Is Hargreaves good enough to make the England squad? He adds a little winky smiley face to suggest that he kind of knows that this would be a bit of a jabbing in our sides at this question. Jamie, what do you think? Obviously.
No.
Grant?
No.
Well, he's gone on about how he wants to, and I think
anyone could go on about how they want to play the England squad.
But the very idea that he's still got that in mind is almost a bit ridiculous.
There are a lot of thoughts that all of us have in mind that are pretty ridiculous. A couple of questions we're going to close with here come from Lester via the CanadianSoccerNews.com comment section. First one, Grant, I'm going to throw to you first quickly here. On June 8th versus Cuba, Canada's first game of World Cup qualifying this year, if Lars Hirschfeld, Milan Borjan, and Kenny Stamatopoulos are all healthy, who gets the starting goal?
Well, I mean, I would...
Just give me a name.
I would say Milan Borjan, but I mean, he might not have a club. Up until about a week or so ago, that would have been my first answer without even hesitating. Yeah. But now, who knows?
Yeah, but now Grant's all confused and he's starting to sweat.
Yeah, I'm just... Heart palpitations.
It smells like sweet light crude in here.
Yeah.
Jamie?
I might be inclined, because of Borjan's situation, to say Hirschfeld. He'll be in the middle of his club season in Norway, so he'll be all warmed up and ready to go.
There you go. He could, you know, grow some hair. He'll be a little bit warmer even. Lars Hirschfeld is going to be my answer as well. We'll move on to the last question here, and we hit on this kind of subject a little earlier. With the Canadian Soccer Association celebrating its centennial year and rumors flying about them wanting to have a big celebratory match, the Canadian men's national team, most supporters, and I think we'd agree, would say that the USA would be the ideal opponent for a number of reasons. But if the USA is not available or it doesn't work out, if the CSA wants a big marquee matchup for its centennial year, who do you want in that game, Jamie, facing Canada?
I'm inclined to say someone like England, but I also kind of want to say Papua New Guinea so that we can thump them really good.
Just lay an ass whooping on them.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll show them. Grant?
If the USA is not available?
Yes.
Brazil.
Well, that would be nice. We almost beat them a couple of years ago in Seattle.
I mean, they're not going to come, but Brazil.
Well, we could ask them to come, play it in Nunavut, and then, you know, we'll get a kind of a pretty crummy out turnout from the Brazilian team. We'll have a pretty good chance.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe play it in Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, turn back the clock to 1994, fill the place with 60,000 screaming Canadian fans. That's realistic, don't you think?
And maybe we can get Fat Ronaldo to play as well.
Hey, why not? I mean, he could come out of retirement again if he's gotten over his dengue fever.
Dengue fever. I've also noticed that he looks very much like the kid from Modern Family.
What's the Manny?
The Colombian kid, Manny. From, yeah, he does. He looks a lot like him.
Looks like Manny?
Yeah. If you imagine him with a wig on, he's got the kind of pudgy face now. It's weird.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If Ronaldo's running around with somebody who looks like Sofia Vergara, then he's having the last laugh on all of us.
I'm sure he probably is.
He was also a professional soccer player for a number of years.
He's also a millionaire.
He's had a lot of laughs on us.
Pretty sure he's got the last laugh on all of us anyway. That brings us to the end of questions from the audience. Those are all the ones we could get to this time. Thank you to everyone who submitted them to us via Facebook on our Facebook page, Facebook at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. Yeah, I said it several times. Via email, via Twitter, all those other things. We're going to take a little break here, grab a coffee or some such thing, get ourselves revitalized for the end of the show, which will, of course, be promotion relegation. And we're back. We never went anywhere, but here we are. This is going to be promotion relegation, bringing us to the home stretch here. Do this every week. We take one story we like to relegate. Nope, that's not how we do it. We take one story we like to promote and one story we don't like to relegate. I'm relegating my own pronunciation of my script here. Grant?
Yes.
As usual, if you're done flittering around on Twitter there, I'm going to turn to you first and ask, who or what this week would you like to promote?
I am going to promote a new soccer league in India. This is sort of, they plan this, no, just listen. They plan this league to sort of be modeled on this, along the same lines as the Indian Premier League in cricket, which has been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm most excited about is the plan for this league is to only have six teams. So therefore, we're finally going to have another sports league in the world with fewer teams than the CFL. six teams in the Indian Premier Soccer League.
Isn't it kind of not a league per se, but more of a, like a, not a knockout competition, but sort of like...
Don't mess with the theme I'm going with here. Six teams league.
Are any of the teams going to be owned by Shah Rukh Khan?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You just have to bring him up on every episode.
But he actually owns one of the cricket teams. I think it's the Kolkata Knight Riders, I believe, is the name of the team.
So you're just trying to impress everybody with your pronunciation of Hindi names.
That's part of it, and I'm trying to stick it to someone on Twitter who said my last promotion or relegation of Shah Rukh Khan's daughter put him to sleep. There you go.
Wow.
I mentioned him again.
Hold on a second. It says here, though, they're going to auction off 30 players and six coaches from abroad. In April.
What do you mean they're going to auction them off?
They're going to auction them off. I guess the players sign up and the coaches sign up.
I'm sorry, it's a human auction?
It's a human auction in
April.
It
sounds suspiciously like the slave trade.
Call it what you want, but it's happening.
I just
call
it the slave trade.
Okay. All right. Wow. I'm just saying it's happening in India in April. All these players are signing up.
And
coaches are signing up, and they're going to auction them off to the six different teams.
Grant, before you get yourself in any more trouble, I'll let you go and bury a live eagle. And turn to Jamie and ask Jamie.
Those things can be tricky.
Who or what would you like to promote?
I'm going to promote this is hard to do, but I'm going to promote David Beckham. Because
it's not hard to do. You just did it.
Well, I did it, but I don't, you know.
He doesn't get enough sort of press or attention.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's just re-signed with the LA Galaxy. And from my own personal understanding of this, from, kind of not reading anything about it, is that his wife and children were just desperate to get out of the United States. Victoria Beckham is really still worried about a double-dip recession. She's a bit upset about the whole Keystone Pipeline thing.
Oh, yeah.
Various socioeconomic problems that she's really in tune with, really keen on following. She's not big on the Republican primaries. She doesn't like the direction, and she wants out. And the children are equally upset about these kind of things. But David Beckham, the steadfast soccer pioneer that he is, has decided, family be damned, I'm staying here because I want to grow the game in the United States. And I'm assuming he's doing it for no money.
If anyone listening to this took what Jamie just said at face value, please stop listening, delete this show, and never listen again.
Mm-hmm.
This week, I'm going to promote beer. Specifically, beer in Brazil. Specifically, even more specifically, the fact that FIFA is laying down the law. They are telling the Brazilian authorities, we don't care that you've had a ban on selling beer in your soccer stadium since 2003 because it cut down on supporter violence. There must be beer at the 2014 World Cup at all of the game venues. And they're doing this out of a love of the game and their knowledge that the consumption of beer by spectators is as key to having a World Cup and having a soccer game as, you know, having an eagle buried under the field or having celebrities in the stands enjoying catered meals.
If these FIFA suits had ever been, you know, paid $10 to go see a crappy seat to go watch the Toronto Blue Jays play, they would know it's very easy to stuff a Mickey into your sock. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have beer being sold in the stadium. There's all sorts of ways around this.
Well, Grant, in what I'm sure is a complete coincidence, Budweiser is one of the largest sponsors of FIFA, and they, you know, want to distribute their product in all of the stadia. But good for FIFA. Good for them for laying down the law where it's important. We've seen them crack down on racism, crack down on internal corruption. Now they're cracking down on sobriety. It's a good move, and this clear, steadfast stance that they are taking.
Kick sobriety out of football.
I am sure that their no-nonsense approach to this issue will continue at the 2022 World Cup. I'm sure of it.
We'll see about that. But I think it kind of fits in line with the anti-corruption stance, because it's really hard to be cleverly corrupt if you're massively drunk.
You don't even really view it as being corrupt.
Yeah, you know? Just kind of fumble around and, hey, briefcase money, come on. And then, you know, it's really obvious. You just can't accomplish it.
Do you think anyone will notice I wore these suspenders yesterday? Nah.
Hey, briefcase money, come on.
Hey, briefcase.
Grant,
yeah.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I am relegating Blackburn Rovers manager Steve Keane.
Are they going to auction him off?
I don't know. If he signs up for this new Indian soccer league, they just might. So he has come out in the press in Blackburn, it was a Daily Mail in England.
And not to be confused with the press.
Right, exactly. And said that he said he's afraid to go out on the town in Blackburn. He's worried about supporter abuse, and he's scared to leave his house and go out and experience everything Blackburn has to offer. And I think he's just making stuff up. He just doesn't want to bother going out in Blackburn.
Well, why would you say that, Grant? Are you saying there's not a lot to do?
No, because I went and I looked at there's a Blackburn tourism board, and I'm just going to read you something here from...
You're looking at this on Twitter?
No, on my BlackBerry.
Oh, I was going to say...
I'm at the official website.
Are you sure that's not a joke Twitter account?
No, this is real.
Website.
This is real.
Okay.
This is the official... The borough is a vibrant, happening place to be with great food, good sport, and a fashionable heritage. So I don't know what kind of problem Steve Keane has.
I think Steve Keane is having a problem figuring out what fashionable heritage means.
I've got the coolest corset for this season. It's so Victorian.
Ooh, these mock Tudor buildings are so hot right now. Also, I think that if he continues playing at this little game of suddenly not being willing to sell Junior Hoylett in this January transfer window and puts Canadian fans through another long period of not knowing whether he's going to, you know, sign up and play for the national team or not, he might not be well advised to go out in Canada either. You might want to, if he comes to Canada, just stay in the hotel or there'll be some supporter abuse
there.
Wears
out his welcome in Blackburn, all of Canada. He's going to have to go to India.
Yeah.
It's the only option left. Jamie?
Yep.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I and everyone who watches soccer and is on Twitter am going to relegate Pepe. Real Madrid defender Pepe.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. He, yesterday in the Copa del Rey, an El Clasico, Barcelona-Real Madrid, he basically just defamed the game of soccer itself. Not only
I think Grant did that a couple of minutes ago as well.
Well, we've all done it, you know, we've all done it, but he does it on a much bigger scale than we do. He had what has got to be the most preposterous dive I've ever seen in my life. I mean, Cesc Fabregas was, you know, kind of vaguely beside him, and he took that as a full-on, you know, Dolph Lundgren punch to the face and went down, holding his face and rolling around and just looking like a bit of an ass. And then he followed that up. He followed up, like, the non-existent violence committed upon him with actual violence committed on Leo Messi by stamping on his hand, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he did a weird little stutter step when walking past Messi, who had been fouled and was on the ground, just to make sure he really dug the cleats into the back of Messi's hand.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I read this morning that even some of the Madrid-based newspapers have come out and said, yeah, Pepe,
they were all over him. I mean, there was Madrid fans, Madrid newspapers.
Everyone's having a go. We've got a quote from Gerard Piqué. Now, I mean, Messi himself had a pretty spectacular dive later on in the game where Fabio Contrao touched him on the head, and Messi basically acted as if his head had been shot and he kind of rolled around and was holding it. So, I mean, it's not like Barcelona are perfectly innocent of these things, but Piqué had a good quote after the game. I do not have a teammate like Pepe in Barca's dressing room. I do not hope to have a teammate who acts like Pepe does. And it's just kind of a one professional to another, I hate you kind of thing. And there's
Wayne Rooney was...
Wayne Rooney's tweet of Pepe, what an idiot. Which, I mean, Rooney's not innocent of...
idiocy?
Being an idiot himself, but that's pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I think that the general hockey-inspired code that a lot of people go by in this country of letting the players sort things out amongst themselves during the game is a bit silly and a bit antiquated, but just once, I want someone like Pepe or someone doing something similar to that just to get decked in the chops in the middle of a game.
Or just Pepe realizes the next game, the next time he plays Barcelona, he's going to have to go into a fight at the beginning of the game just to clear that out.
Yep.
Gets 5 minutes, and then he's back on.
Gets jerseyed and, you know, takes a sip of Gatorade, and then he's good to go.
Puyol destroys him because Puyol looks like the kind of guy who could get that done.
Tear him limb for limb. Yeah.
This week, I am going to relegate Grant. No, I'm not going to relegate Grant, but I'm going to say, Grant, this goes against something you said a moment ago in that finally there's a professional league that has fewer teams than the CFL. There's another one that exists and has existed for a number of years, women's professional soccer down in the U.S. I'm going to relegate the latest twist in the saga going on there with that league and former team owner Dan Borislav. There was a court ruling made on Wednesday that said he, of course, was the owner of a team called Magic Jack down in Boca Raton, Florida, that was essentially kicked out of the league last year due to allegations of certain things that he had done and that had taken place between him and the other owners. He took it to court saying, they have no right to do this, disband my team. So they've come to this agreement for the next 2 years that Borislav gets to keep a professional team, gets to keep Magic Jack playing down there. They're not actually in the league, but they play an exhibition schedule in all of the venues that the current actual teams play in. So it didn't say specifically, this is the story I wrote from Bo Dure, I read it from Bo Dure at ESPN. It didn't specifically say they'd be playing against all of the WPS teams. What I'm imagining is that this guy gets to keep a team, make money, which last year had players like Abby Wambach, Hope Solo, and a number of the high-profile U.S. players. He gets to keep that team going in existence. They can't play for the WPS championship, but he gets to rake in money anyway as sort of a traveling Harlem Globetrotters-esque sideshow. It's kind of a silly situation. It might be the only one that was possible given the people at play and the circumstances, but
Sounds like what the Toronto Maple Leafs have been doing for like 30 years.
Yeah, except the Harlem Globetrotters are good.
Yeah,
they travel around to show people what, you know, the those at the pinnacle of the sport could do, not ways in which they can shoot themselves in the foot.
The Maple Leafs situation is more like if the Generals were the headlining team and they traveled around and people went to watch them lose.
Yeah, it's a weak analogy. I admit it.
The Generals have been selling out their season ticket packages for 30 years now. It's astonishing. That brings us to the end of promotion relegation, but not to the end of the show because we have Taste the Trivia coming up here. That's our weekly trivia challenge where not only the answers but the questions are provided by you, the listeners. I got it right this time. Last week, the question was, in the 1995 U-17 Men's World Cup, Canada scored one goal off the foot of Patrice Bernier. In the game, he scored, named Canada's three substitutes, and the minute they came on the field, the answer was Jason Mouteau in the 60th minute, Steve Mayo in the 72nd, Edward McMillan in the 87th. I think that's the last time any of us heard from any of them. The winner of the challenge was Melissa Peaky. I may be pronouncing it wrong, which is bad because I also have an Italian-sounding last name. So I apologize, Melissa, if I screwed it up. But you can comfort yourself with the new Umbro zip-up jacket that you will be receiving as a reward for answering the question correctly last week. You have also given us this week's trivia question, which is, and it's fitting, I think. Last week it was pretty thematic. We spoke to Patrice Bernier. He was in the question. This week we're speaking about the women's national team, and here's the question. In the year that Canada had its best showing at the Women's World Cup, who scored the most goals for Canada in the tournament? Listen closely. In the year that Canada had its best showing at the Women's World Cup, who scored the most goals for Canada in the tournament? That's the FIFA Senior Women's World Cup. No trick question there. If you have the answer to that question, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you were the first one to provide the correct answer, you will be not only the winner of a new zip-up jacket courtesy of Umbro, you will be providing the question for next week's edition of Taste the Trivia. And that, I believe, brings us to the end of the show. As I mentioned earlier, you can get in touch with us on Facebook. You can email us, CanadianSoccerGuys@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes if you haven't done so already, because you just get it really quickly. And, of course, you can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at @CDNSoccerBlog, and I will be probably tweeting frantically during Canada's games in the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament. Grant, where are you on Twitter?
We're also accepting smoke signals. I'm watching for those now.
If you want to
contact us in that manner.
That is a very cumbersome Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Just give him your Twitter name and move on.
SCG Grant.
You were thinking about it pretty tough there. You should have put it in your talking points so you didn't forget. Jamie? Yeah.
Yes.
Where are you on Twitter?
The computer, I imagine, but also Doyle _Jamie.
All right, that's enough of this. We'll be yammering at you again next week. Till then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.